Welcome to Our Callings Podcast, our podcast. Today, we're going to talk about inclement weather shelters. It's an emergency. The weather's terrible. How do we put this thing together? How do we run it? And I'm going to be talking about this with my friend Daniel Roby from Austin Street Center.
Who is Our Calling? What does Our Calling do to help the homeless?
The nonprofit.
We care with dignity.
Our Calling.
Can't help but think about the definition of Christian.
We connect with intentionality.
Called Our Calling.
It's to Our Calling.
We build community with integrity.
Our Calling.
This is Our Calling and our podcast, A Word on the Streets about Homelessness. Today, I'm with my friend Daniel Roby. Daniel is the CEO of Austin Street Shelter in Dallas, Austin Street Center. Mm-hmm. How long have you been there?
9 years now.
Okay. And before then, you were in Portland?
Yep. 8 years in Portland running homeless services.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have a little bit of experience under your belt.
Almost as much as you.
Man, I'm still learning from you. Today, we're just going to talk about inclement weather because we're kind of in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And inclement weather happens to us when it gets really hot or really cold. We'll talk about shelter on another day, but today we just want to talk about inclement weather.
Okay.
And I want to start off with the question, what's the difference between running a regular shelter and an emergency inclement weather shelter? Because it sounds like the same thing. Like you're a shelter guy, you've been running shelters for years.
Sure.
Man, it's just a rinse, wash, repeat, right? What's the difference between running a regular emergency shelter and a emergency inclement weather shelter?
That's a great question. And obviously, the people that come in during inclement weather are all unsheltered, right? And most people who come to an emergency shelter, typically, you may have some that are unsheltered. You also have a lot of people who may be coming out of various institutions, you know, a hospital, a jail, similar. You may have people who come to you being kicked out of a home. Maybe they're living with family. Or maybe they've been living in a car. But when you run an inclement weather shelter and everyone has been typically chronically homeless, right, very severe, persistent, untreated mental illness combined with a very active addiction life and just the overall breakdown of the physical body that happens after years and years of being on the streets, you're dealing with things like, you know, public urination and people's inability to control their bowel movements. And you're dealing with a level of mental health issues that don't typically exist in typical emergency shelters. So, for all these reasons, it requires a very different service model and a very different level of support for an inclement weather shelter.
So I put together a white paper a few years ago on this when the city decided they wanted to get involved. You know, at first, emergency inclement weather sheltering was just the shelters adding some more space. And then, you know, we're not a shelter. We decided to stay open. You know, we got the ticket from the city, all that kind of stuff. And then the city said, hey, they wanted to do this and start to putting together some details on it. And so I put together this list of some of the differences between people that stay at a shelter normally and people that come to an emergency inclement weather shelter.
Yeah.
And it's the list you said. First of all, people who have a significant or recent trauma exposure, maybe more so than those that are traditionally in a shelter. Mm-hmm. Second, people that are susceptible to outburst.
Mm-hmm.
So these are people that just got kicked out of a regular shelter.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Or can't stay in a regular shelter.
And to your point, I mean, we've seen tons of people that our staff know because they showed up and then were kicked out, right?
Yeah,
because
the
behavior is not something that can be typically tolerated.
So. But in cold weather, you're like, hey, can we tolerate
this guy?
Yeah. Another is hygiene, right? We have people that come into an inclement weather shelter who haven't bathed in months, right? And people that have maybe not just incontinent issues for the day, but they've had incontinence issues. And so they're sitting in and have been sitting in soiled or wet clothes for a really long time. Yep. They can't bathe themselves.
Yep.
You know, most shelters require people that can manage their ADLs,
right?
Activities of daily living.
We require that, yeah.
So what are the requirements to get into Austin Street as far as like your ADLs?
Yeah, so our typical emergency shelter is all the ADLs have to be in place. So the individual has to be able to navigate a shelter environment on their own, so not being wheeled around in a wheelchair.
They can wheel themselves around.
They can wheel themselves around, right? Or similarly, like, people who are vision impaired, they have to be able to kind of walk, you know, the shelter floor without risk of falling And you know, all these are things that, you know, an inclement weather shelter we would not typically require, right?
So in a traditional shelter, you have to be able to go to the bathroom on your own.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get off the wheelchair, yep. onto the bed, yep. back onto the wheelchair, absolutely. On your own. Yep. Activities of daily living, yes. that's ADL. But in an emergency inclement weather shelter, you're going to take people in that can't.
That's right.
That soil themselves regularly. That's right. So like having adult diapers and stuff and the hygiene, we have to be able to take people that can't manage their hygiene. Yep.
And it's been interesting because I've had some conversations recently with some cities who, you know, saying, hey, you know, we've never had a shelter. We want to start one. And in those conversations, it's been really interesting because they come up with budgets that are based upon a service model that is, you know, a typical emergency shelter that you would operate. And I say, hey, that's fine. You can do that. You'll serve people. It'll be great. But if you're focused on chronically homeless people, severe and persistent mental illness and addiction that are on the streets and been on the streets, you know, if that's what the pushback of your community is and that's what you want to address, well, you need a budget that's going to reflect the type of care and support that you need, which is very different from a typical emergency shelter.
And beyond that is just people, and we already talked about a little bit of this, is people with significant health issues, right? So we get people that just got dropped off from the hospital who just had surgery.
Yep.
I mean, their sternum is just wired together.
Yep.
They've got a colostomy bag next to them that might be leaking.
Yep.
Or they have, you know, a major long-term or terminal illness that, again, most of our shelters wouldn't accept.
Yep.
Now, you guys have some respite space in Austin Street, which is pretty unique and pretty awesome.
Sure.
But even then, you have limitations. Yet when we run an emergency inclement weather shelter, the hospitals want to discharge lots of people, busloads, to these spaces that really have nowhere else to go.
Yeah. And you know, the medical respite program that we've been able to do has been very effective, but that program is specific for people who will essentially recover from whatever's going on. So if they are post-operation and, you know, in the next, you know, 6 to 12 weeks or whatever, they're going to be better, that's great. If you've got a lot of chronic issues, so, you know, you're being treated ongoing for cancer.
You're not going to get better.
You're not going to get better, then it's not the appropriate program. In fact, we'll actually tell people, hey, this is not appropriate referral for this program. This is for a designated period of time. If you need ongoing care, we try to defer it to nursing homes, but as you know, I mean, there's not the funding, there's not the resources. You know, these people are not getting placed in nursing homes, and a lot of times they get kicked out of the nursing homes they're placed in.
Yeah.
So that's certainly a big challenge. Health is a massive difference between, you know, we have health challenges at typical shelter, but it's the next level on the streets.
Another thing that we have to anticipate at an emergency inclement weather shelter is because you have people in that aren't used to being in a building.
Yes.
They're not used to being this close to people.
It's true.
Maybe they already have normal agitation, some mental health challenges, some cognitive challenges. We're going to have a lot more altercations than we normally would.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we've both seen that, right? I know we're operating several different shelters in collaboration together during this inclement weather period. And there's been altercations at both locations that you won't typically see at Austin Street Center. I'm not saying they would never happen, but certainly they're going to happen on a daily or hourly basis. Whereas in our typical shelter environment, you know, it's, you know, maybe you have some kind of incident, you know, every couple of months or so.
And really this gets down to, in the goal of an emergency inclement weather shelter is to get people out of inclement weather.
Yeah.
In order to do that, you have to lower the barrier.
Agreed.
And that's really where I see the major differences is in an emergency inclement weather shelter, you have extremely low barrier or almost no barrier.
Yeah.
Where in a shelter, you have to have standards. And so that standards means you have to have an ID.
Yep.
You have to have a background check, right? You have to be able to manage, you know, your own self, where in an emergency situation, I'm just trying to get this guy out of the ice.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to run his background.
Right.
I'm not going to make sure he has an ID, right? Everybody can come in. We're not checking backgrounds. We're not checking IDs. If you come in with a name and a birthday and even partial of a social, we're going to let you in.
Sure.
And that brings in a different group of folks. And also a lower barrier is bags and possessions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when someone normally comes into a traditional shelter, what can they bring with them?
Well, it's usually about 2 bags of 25 pounds apiece at Austin Street. So that's usually, you know, what they're limited to.
Yeah, and that's most of our shelters in town kind of have the same kind of guidelines. And in an emergency inclement weather shelter, you know, we still limit them, right? Yeah, it's kind of like your airplane. You can have one carry-on and one personal bag, right? So we've got 2 bags. They have to fit under your cot. But sometimes these are full of things people just randomly grabbed out of their camp.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, if we were to go through the bags, might have garbage.
Absolutely.
Right? Old snacks from last week. Yep. It might have some wet clothes, might be all kinds of things. We go through those, but I don't think we're going through them, and we don't really want to as thoroughly as you would for a traditional shelter.
Yeah, this makes me think about a time just a couple of days ago when I got a call from a board member to go check on somebody. And, you know, Austin Street doesn't typically do the type of search and rescue that our calling does. And we're opening inclement weather shelters, and I drive out behind this warehouse, and, you know, I can't find the guy. And I have someone from a neighboring business direct me, and there's just, like, pile of blankets in the corner. And I'm like, oh, that's a person, you know? And as we you know, peel back these wet blankets, you know, he's a W amputee, you know, he's laying in his own vomit, and, you know, can't even sit up on his own. He can't get in the wheelchair on his own, you know? So we're picking this guy up, dusting him off, putting him in my car. And it's just like, you know, it's certainly, it made it so real to me that, you know, I think I'm so in tune with people with significant need, but when we have these inclement weather shelters, when we engage this population we don't typically engage, like, it is a different level of support and care that's needed. And it makes me realize we need to think really differently about how we respond to people's needs, especially when people who would typically never come to a shelter, even if it was an option, you know, are at a space where they realize, even subconsciously, if I don't go inside tonight, I'm not going to live till tomorrow.
Yeah, so our teams, you know, we don't run a shelter. Yeah. Our teams specifically focus on the unsheltered. And so a lot of these individuals, because we've built a lot of relational equity with them, mm-hmm. guys that are on fentanyl, that are on, you know, overdosing all the time,
sure.
You know, a lot of people that have multiple amputations that OD'd on whatever, you know, because we have relational equity with them, I think we get an opportunity to say, hey, Joe, mm-hmm. we've known you for a year and a half.
Yep.
Your friend Sam died last year when it got iced all over.
Sure.
That's you got an amputation last year. You lost your leg because of frostbite the year before.
Yeah.
Do you trust us? Will you let us take you in? And I think some of that relational piece is so important throughout mm-hmm. the year when we do street outreach.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that we have that opportunity to bring those relationships in.
Yeah, that makes me think about something else, which is people's familiarity with having a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning when you've been unsheltered for a long time, you just lose a lot of those social skills. So you forget how to advocate for yourself. You forget how to communicate. So, you know, we've seen a lot of people in this most recent inclement weather shelter event, and similar to every year, who, you know, are kind of shuffling or stumbling through, you know, our shelter floor, and, you know, come up to you and kind of start mumbling something that's incoherent, doesn't make any sense. And, you know, maybe somewhere in there, they're trying to say, hey, I need some toilet paper, I need some socks, or I need whatever. But they're not even able to get the words out because they just haven't had the type of human interaction, and they've lost that ability to communicate and engage with others.
So we're going to have different people.
Yeah.
And we're going to have people that aren't used to being inside.
Yeah.
We're also going to be in a different building, right? So talk about, let's talk about a little bit of the differences between
mm-hmm.
what you would plan, because you guys just built a new shelter.
Sure.
Your shelter is a year old now.
Yeah.
What you planned in a new shelter that you built versus mm-hmm. kind of what we get.
Yeah.
So just to set the stage here, we're operating right now at Fair Park
mm-hmm.
in a building called Graham Place,
right
near where the feet of Big Tech's would be, right? We walked in the building for the first time on a Tuesday. We planned on a Wednesday. We set up on Thursday. We moved people in on Friday.
Right.
We'd never been in this building before.
True.
So kind of you get what you get,
right?
And it's not the perfect building.
Right.
What's the difference in between what you plan and what you have in a regular shelter
mm-hmm.
versus the facility we kind of just mm-hmm. get
in
an emergency?
Yeah. In, you know, talking about these emergencies when you're given a building, you know, this city or whatever community you're engaged with is going to put you in whatever space they have.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that's just a big open warehouse And that's it, you know? And so the bathrooms were not designed for people that have significant health issues or incontinence issues. You know, you don't have, you probably have no showers at all. You know, if by some miracle you get a place with like one shower, right, it's not going to have the hose that you need to be able to.
For seating somebody.
All that stuff. And so, have big open warehouse. You can't segregate between men and women or people that have special needs. And from a service perspective, instead of creating space where you're saying, hey, these are where service partners are going to be, we're going to offer mental health here, whatever, it's just one big open area. So it's loud. People are new to the environment and they don't know where to get what they need because wayfinding is really hard when it's just one big open floor. So a lot of challenges. What do you think?
So as we've been doing this for years, we've kind of recognized the importance of creating those separate spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So when we set up and, we walked in there Tuesday, we started drawing on blueprints trying to figure out where walls would go, and walls meaning curtains, mm-hmm. right? So pipe and drape. But we set up a space for men, which is obviously, we know that 70% of our population is male. We set up a space for women. We want to provide some safe space for women to have privacy. And then we created a space in the middle we call our high needs area. Those are for individuals that for one reason or another need to be closer to the bathroom.
Sure.
Those people have mobility challenges, people that are elderly, people that don't identify as male or female. We want to create a safe space for individuals to be. Most of those individuals can't get up and go to the food line and wait, with 800 other people in the room. Mm. They may not be able to just get up and run to the bathroom. That's why we bring in porta potties in addition to the toilets there.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to, this men's area, women's area, and high needs area, we had to create an entertainment space. We learned this years ago. We have to create something for people to do.
That's right.
So they can play dominoes, so they can watch movies. I mean, I've got my DirecTV login on these big screens there so we can watch movies, watch a football game, watch, honestly, it's the weirdest thing. Favorite among most people is either Westerns. Or the Hallmark Channel.
It's totally Westerns.
These old guys love the Hallmark Channel. They're like loving every moment of it.
It's on constantly.
Is the girl in the red dress finally going to kiss the guy at the end, you know? But anyway, you do this because you want people to be not just entertained, but give them something to do.
Yeah.
Because we're humans.
Yeah. Well, and I think about like our own living environments, right? I would imagine that the place where you sleep at night is not the same place where you watch TV. I imagine the place where you eat is not the same place where you're sleeping either. So, when we try to confine people, in a big room with, hundreds and hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people, and say, here's your 4-foot by 2-foot square area, that's not reasonable.
And grab your plate of food and go sit on your blanket and you're hot.
Yeah.
Not real reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think you have been really a masterful creator of design, ingress, egress, right? Sleeping quarters and setting up something that, is very operationally efficient. And I'm grateful that we do this together.
Well, I've said this 100 times. If we weren't doing this together, we just wouldn't
do it.
We wouldn't do it. Yeah. Put somebody else in your shoes. Yeah. I'm like, y'all have fun.
Yeah.
I guess that's one of the challenges you just mentioned, ingress, egress. And so that's important to me, not only from a fire safety perspective, but in a place like the State Fair of Texas, the building is designed for families to come in and make memories.
Sure.
Right? It's designed where every corner of the building has people coming in and people going out, where when we run an emergency inclement weather shelter, we only want one entrance.
One entrance, one exit.
Right?
That's it.
So you go to a building that's got 12 sets of entrances.
Yep.
We have to station security at each one because we don't want anybody going out.
Yeah.
Still available for an emergency.
Yeah.
But we don't want anybody going but this one spot. And that's another thing we have to set up when we set up these areas is a secure entry point.
Yeah.
Where people can come in and go through an intake process.
Right.
You guys use our HMIS, right?
Right.
The coalition's HMIS system to collect data on people and to track what we're doing. Then they go through a magnetometer, right? So they're checking their bags, making sure they don't have any weapons. And then once that, they can go in and freely go anywhere within the space. And if they're going outside, the way we run it, and we've gone back and forth in this, but we found the best way to do this is 24-hour a day intake. We're not turning it off at 10 p.m.
Right.
We don't have a curfew. People can come in and out 40 times a day. We don't care. If you want to go out and smoke a cigarette and come back in, no problem.
Yeah.
Why? Because it keeps you calm.
Yes.
We can deal with it from a security perspective.
Yes.
We give you a color wristband for the day. We change colors every day. you've got the blue in, you can come back in.
Yeah.
No problem. You want to go in and out. I would much rather you go outside and come back in 10 minutes later than be stuck in this coop.
I think you should describe that whole wristband process in a little bit more detail, because that was something that, you know, I had never thought of operating our own shelter. You know, it's typically, you know, you know who your people are. You know, we have a sign in, sign out process, but it's much more difficult because you don't have, you know, that easily identifiable data. And to try to control, to your point, you know, people coming in and people leaving, you're trying to give a real accurate count to the community, to the public, on how many people are in the building and what are they doing. And you can't do that if you don't control your entrance and your exit. So maybe I, if it's okay with you, I'd love to hear about that wristband, because I thought that was very creative and it's been very effective for us.
So not only do we need to track and make sure we have enough beds, we have to make sure we have enough resources. Mm-hmm. At our calling, we distribute a lot of resources.
Yeah.
We normally will distribute 1,800 to 1,900 clothing items a week, mm-hmm. right? And so people come in, we track all that stuff. Yep. We're ninjas on that, right? We got some great software for that. In this scenario, we want to do it in a way that still shows equity mm-hmm. and also shows accountability. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be in a scenario where one guy has 9 blankets and another one has none, right? One guy has hoarded all the snacks and another guy comes in hungry. So when we have wristbands, it's not only for intake and security and to make sure that we've already checked you in and you're a person that we allow to be here, and we have some people we have to ask to leave, even in terrible weather, right? Mm-hmm. That happens.
Yeah.
But also we can track the resources we give out, because we always will run out of food. We'll always run out of blankets. So when people come in, the first time they come, they'll sign in. They'll check in with HMIS. They'll put them in the system, brand new, never been there before, first night, right? The first time they get there, they'll get a blanket. Mm-hmm. They will not get another blanket the whole time they're there.
Yeah.
Just the one blanket. And I know that sounds cruel. I'll explain why. They'll come in. We don't leave any blankets on the cots. You don't come in and pick up a cot and pick a blanket. Yep. No. You come in, and when you check in the first time, you'll get a blanket that very first time, and then you'll get a snack bag, mm-hmm. right? Because maybe you haven't eaten in a couple of days. We want to come in and make sure you have a snack. Once you come in, you can pick a cot, empty cot, find one in the space that suits you best.
Right.
And then at nighttime, we're going to go through and make sure that everybody has a blanket. If for some reason someone stole yours and this guy again has 3 and this guy has none, we're going to go through and make sure you know, everybody's covered up, and you know, maybe not as nice of a blanket because that's what we have to offer, a sheet or something, but the building's warm. We're going to make sure everybody's covered. The next day when you go out, we're going to pick a time in the day where we're going to have to re-register everyone. Mm.
Yeah, that's the part.
Because of the HMIS system, you guys need to count another bed night.
Yep.
Right? And so when we switch from blue wristbands to red wristbands, we're going to do that at lunchtime.
Yep.
And we're going to do that when everybody goes through the lunch line. We're going to remove your old wristband, check you back into the system, and give you the new wristband.
Yeah, and I think that's really critical, right? Because you know, what's the most desirable service that either one of us ever provide, right? It's always the meal, right?
Yeah.
It's like the hot meal.
And everybody wants to
eat. Everyone wants to eat, regardless of what else is going on. And so it's like when you use that as the time that you change out the wristbands, well, now you gain a pretty good compliance, right? Because everybody wants to eat, and if they know they have to get a wristband to eat, then they know that transition happens. So after they get the change in color wristbands, you know, what happens then?
So at that point, we also tell security, at this point, don't let anybody in who doesn't have the right color wristband, which just means they stop, they go through intake again, we switch out their wristbands, they come in. And then we have teams that go around to our high needs areas, those people that can't get up and go get in the line and make sure everybody has the right wristband. And we do that for accountability. We do that so that one guy doesn't get 7 snack bags, because honestly, that just happens.
Yeah.
It's human nature.
Right.
It's not because they're homeless. Yeah. It's not because they're whatever.
Immoral,
it's because human nature, right?
Yes.
Someone's going to park crooked and take 2 parking spaces, right? And we'll have to park further back.
That's totally
All
true.
Of us do that, right? Yeah. So it's human nature to make sure one guy gets one snack bag, and the snack bags are loaded, right? Now, what we've done this year is Texas Baptist Men has graciously provided all the meals, which has been awesome.
Yeah.
They did the breakfast. And they did the dinner, and in lunch is a snack bag. It's kind of a grab and go throughout the day kind of scenario. In the past, we've cooked meals. In the past, we've had, you know, people bring in meals, but depending on the weather, that can get really challenging, right? When there's an inch of ice on the ground, it's kind of hard to get the food.
Absolutely.
When someone says, "Hey, I ordered you a pallet of, you know, snacks from Costco, and Costco just closed because of the weather," then, you know, having the access and availability to resources. And for us, you know, one backup plan doesn't work. We have to have a backup to the backup just in case there's an emergency. I remember one year a partner said, we're going to bring you breakfast in the morning, right? And so like 5:30 in the morning, our team calls me and they're like, hey, we have no breakfast, right? Which, you know, we can deal with, but it's just figuring out,
you're giving me PTSD just thinking about it.
How do we come up with breakfast, right, for 600-800 people, yeah, however many? Right. So I have a four-wheel drive, which I love, right? And so I was able to go find a Walmart that was open, fill 8 shopping carts full of snack cakes, my wife and I, for breakfast, and bring them in. I remember one year a guy said, hey, I'm going to smoke you guys some pork for pulled pork sandwiches. Awesome. Thank you. Great. Yeah. It was in Denton. He got iced in and couldn't go. You know, so a normal hour-long drive took me 3 hours each way in my four-wheel drive. I was able to do it. But having these backup plans, and then when you get the backup plans and you get the resources and you get the food, if you don't set some kind of accountability where it's not unlimited, it's not seconds and thirds and fourths, it's not fill up the space under your cot with all the snacks. Otherwise, you're going to have someone come in and you're going to be out of food.
Yep.
You're going to have someone come in and not get a blanket.
Yeah.
Because human nature means someone will get more than they need.
You know what else I found really interesting about how we've kind of operated this together is the folks over at Our Calling are phenomenal where it comes to what I'll call client engagement, or really de-escalation and keeping people calm. So like one of the things that I was thinking that your audience might be interested in hearing about is how they do that. Because as I've watched like your folks engage with people, it's really amazing. Cause you know, you have, you know, third party security contractors or even, you know, police officers who, you know, they get in the middle of it and things just blow up because it's a very specific population with unique needs. And anyway, I've been very impressed with your folks.
So let's switch and talk about security.
Okay.
I brought a show and tell. Mm-hmm. To talk about security.
Oh, you did?
Okay, hold on.
Oh, dude, this is awesome. I didn't know.
So I have this under my couch in my office, okay?
Oh, my God.
And this is only like a month's worth of confiscated weapons.
Oh, this is great. This is
and,
great.
And we'll go through this and talk about some of these.
Okay, what do we have here?
Now, I put my cell phone, charger.
This thing is heavy.
So that is a spike from a tent, you know, when they put up like a circus tent.
Okay.
Which I think is really, really cool. This is my favorite, okay?
Yeah, this is
my totally favorite one, okay? This is like a little stick with a hacksaw blade on it. Okay, hold your arm up, okay? This is how, like, what would you do with this?
Know.
Like Shawshank take 30 years to go through the wall? Yeah, crazy weapons. Some of these are dangerous.
Yeah.
So when you think about de-escalation chains. And there's chains and switchblades and screwdrivers that have been sharpened down, okay? Yeah. If you or I were sleeping outside, we would carry something.
Sure.
We would want to.
Absolutely. When I go camping, I carry something, and I even worry about my safety.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We would want to carry something because the dangers are all around. Even when our street outreach teams go out, honestly, the biggest danger is dogs. But still, people are going to carry something. So when you think about de-escalation, having not just a team that can respond to the worst scenario— but having a team that's equipped to respond to the best scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So our security on staff at Our Calling, and we've gone through every security vendor, I think, in the county, they're now full-time employees.
I think you have gone through every security provider. Because I think for about a couple months there, I think every time I'd show up, there'd be like a new badge.
Yeah, we went through all these different agencies to try to figure out which was the best fit for us. Yeah. And our security guys are all full-time employees.
Yep.
They all are former law enforcement,
and
they all love Jesus, and they all love our people.
It's awesome.
Right? And for us, those are important things.
Yeah, and the
faith thing is important to us because Christians are commanded to love their neighbor as themselves.
Yeah.
Right? The rest of the world, it's a good idea, but I really believe we have a conviction. And I know a lot of people do. I have Muslim friends that love their neighbors and you know, friends that are atheists and agnostics that do. But as Christians, I really believe it is a mandate from a guy that we call a king, a guy that we call our Lord, to love our neighbors. And so having security that first have the right mindset that I'm really here to love my neighbor first, before I step into a situation, before I think about de-escalation, how can I really love this guy that might be carrying a weapon and walk into that scenario for the best outcome?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I was talking to Tommy, your director of security here, and in my conversation with him, one of the things he was telling me about, we were just walking around, just chatting, and he was sharing with me about how you know, he feels a real obligation to make sure he's representative of Christ, because he's like, hey, what's the first thing that people say as soon as they're upset, right? This is supposed to be a Christian place. Right? Yeah. You guys are supposed to love Jesus here. And so, you know, he's like, he was telling me, he was like, Daniel, I'm very aware of that. And so I tell our folks, we have to make sure that in every interaction we are Christ-like, or else they can point to us and see, well, that's a reason why, you know, I don't believe. And obviously, you know, people make their own decisions, but he said it with such conviction that, I was very blown away, because you don't hear that from a lot of people whose primary, you know, default setting is, you know, security, right, and restriction and things like that. They're extraordinary folks.
Yeah, so for us, I mean, our guards are they carry guns. They have less than lethal tasers. Mm-hmm. They have handcuffs.
Yeah.
They wear body cams. They've got radios every day. Mm-hmm. And they're not here to protect you from some 70-year-old homeless lady, you know. You know, I tell people all the time, what's she going to do? You know, she doesn't have teeth. She's going to gum you, you know. Don't worry about that. they're really here to protect them from predators that come around.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds weird, but the best food at the picnic draws the worst pest, right? Mm-hmm. It draws the worst insects. Mm-hmm. Our most vulnerable people draw, for some reason, the worst predators that come to prey on
it's
them.
It's true.
I mean, we work for trafficking it victims, really domestic violence victims. Domestic violence victim is not going to pick someone who's going to fight back, right? A trafficker is taking advantage of someone and has warped their brain. Mm-hmm. And even some of our elderly folks, they have people that are taking their money, taking advantage of them on a regular basis.
All the time.
Our security is here to protect them.
Yeah.
And they're looking out for their best interest.
Yeah.
And they're also trained.
Yeah.
Right? These are former law enforcement. Mm-hmm. But they also, you know, we regularly go through Verbal Judo, which is a book.
Yeah.
And it's great about how to talk to people and de-escalation techniques and, you know, motivational interviewing, all the different pieces. I mean, sometimes it's our security guards that will convince someone, hey, man, it's time
amazing?
For you to get off the streets.
Yeah, because they have so much engagement. They have so much FaceTime.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I love hearing, and I hear this all the time. Guys will walk up to Tommy, who's our head of security, and say, I know I'm supposed to hate you, but you're my brother in Christ, and I love you, and I want to thank you for what you do here. You know? And they're like, have this
so
internal, internal argument.
Dialogue, yeah.
Okay, so looking at time, we talk a little bit about security, and for someone doing this that may not have a security team, right? So like, let's say a church wants to open up their, you know, gymnasium or something. So some of my friends from the East Plano Islamic Center came to visit us the other day. They bring us tons of blankets every year when we do this. They're great, great guys. And they've opened up for the first time their gymnasium. And they have like 140 people sleeping in their space up in Plano.
Wow.
And so we were talking about, you know, some of the needs. They keep calling me, you know, asking questions, which is great. They're learning from us. We're learning from them. It's a great, you know, way to communicate and just build relationship and be a community. Someone wants to do this in their gymnasium. What should they do in the area of security?
Well, I can say the process that we've worked on, and actually we do it at Austin Street and we do it at inclement weather as well, you know, regarding, you know, possessions, anything that's unsafe when security, you know, brings folks in, you know, we found that in order to make sure that people come into shelter, right, you have to make sure that it's low barrier enough that people access it, right? You mm-hmm. don't want to say that you're opening up and then turning people away and then they're dying on the streets.
Sure.
So the way we do that is, you know, we typically have, you know, some really kind of stiff, you know, manila envelope. You know, we will, you know, write the information of the individual, you know, on that manila envelope, and we'll put whatever weapons in there. So they get it back when they leave. You know, and I know some people are like, hey, you know, we shouldn't let people. I'm like, okay, people are going to have stuff, right? And they need to make sure they don't have it while they're in the building, but they need to also know that they're going to get it when they leave, so that way, you know, they don't just say, hey, I'll sleep outside, and we don't see them again the next day.
It's the same thing with pets.
Yeah.
Right? If you're not going to come in because your dog's with you, find a place to keep the dog. And we have this room set up.
Yep,
we have all these kennels and stuff. But if you're not going to come in because your pocket knife, your box cutter, your, you know, whatever, your piece of chain.
And they feel like, hey, like— this is my lifeline. Like, yes, they're thinking, hey, someone may attack me. I can't go into shelter if you're going to take my only safety. And I have to trust you that you're going to keep me safe. Because if I'm giving you my knife, that means, hey, I'm exposed, right? Yep. If you're not there, you know, in my corner, then I don't know what I'm going to do for myself. And these are people who are used to having to rely on themselves because so many other people have let them down. And so, you know, making sure that they know, hey, you'll get this back when you leave is important.
We had a guy last year, I know a lot of police officers, and so a cop friend came in and he goes, hey, Wayne, this guy has some stuff I need you to hold. And he pulls out two pistols, two Glocks, and he's like, can y'all store these? And I'm like, absolutely, man. We have gun safe, no problem, right? And the guy carried two Glocks and had a backup knife
on gosh.
It. And that's, it's okay, right?
Yeah, right.
It's legal.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
And we want to keep him safe and warm.
So, yeah.
We want to keep him safe and warm. And when he leaves, you know, Tommy and the guys can give it back to him. You know, if you can carry that in Walmart, we have to be able to trust, you know, that we can get an opportunity to create a safe space for this guy.
Yeah.
If us caring for his pocket knife or his pet is what gets him in the door, then we will create an opportunity to do that. Not just say, throw it away, leave it outside, go bury it outside and hope you can find it later.
Right. Yeah. And I found that people really, you know, appreciate that. We have so many people say, hey, I'm so glad that you have the security that you have here. You know, I feel like I don't worry about my safety while I'm here. And so that's so critical. And, you know, to your point, I've been to a lot of shelters that have knives buried, you know, a block away, you know, from the shelter door because they don't allow those things, but they also don't provide a process. And so I think that's really important.
So I'll show you one in here that I think is funny.
That the chain? Oh, what is that?
This is a Swiss Army knife
we
took from somebody. And sometimes people come up and say, will you hold this for us? Which is fine. So we have a vending machine downstairs for our guests. And, you know, of course, we have sodas and all the junk food everybody wants in there. We also have bus passes in there.
Yeah.
Right? Someone wants a bus pass, and we give it at the discounted rate. They can put $3. Yeah. Our vending machine also has Swiss Army knives.
Wow.
Right? Because if someone needs something to be able to cut their fingernails, you know, they want a little file for something, it's got a little blade on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd much rather them, you know, if you want a little pocket knife, I carry a Swiss Army knife, right? Yeah. So we have Swiss Army knives in our facility, in our vending machine, every day open for guests. Now, at our calling, we don't take these out of people's pockets.
Yeah.
Right? It's zero barrier. If someone wants to carry that in their pocket, you know, that's fine. Yeah. And our security will handle it. We anticipate that everybody has a weapon.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot wiser than anticipating they don't, and then they find out they do. But I think that's interesting. We actually sell these in our little vending machine downstairs for a couple bucks. Okay, so last thing. If someone wants to open up an inclement weather shelter, I think it's important that you consider the what-ifs, right? We've had inclement weather shelters open up, and then they lose power. They open up, and then they have pipes burst, right? We were at Fair Park 2 years ago, and the water got shut off, and you know, it was shooting everywhere, and toilets got shut down. Austin Street this year, your second old facility, y'all had how many pipes burst?
Four, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, during the freeze, so you lost toilets, right?
We did.
The what if is going to happen.
Yep.
The question is not if, it's when. It's like when it happens, when you run out of food, when you run out of blankets, do you have a back stash?
Yes.
When you run out of food, do you have an emergency scenario?
Yeah.
When your pipes burst, where can you walk these people to find a toilet and walk them back or shuttle them back and forth?
And I think the pre-planning is really important on that too, because you know part of what we've been working on is really building strong relationships with all the different city departments and county resources to make sure that whatever you need to call on that you've got somebody. Because if you don't have the cell phone number, and I don't mean the email address, right? Because the email address is great when something's a week away, but you're like, when I need something, I need it right then because I have 800, 900, 1,000 people or more depending on making sure that they can have access to what they need. I remember when we were planning for this, you were like, Daniel, do you have your plumber? Like, are they on site ready to go, right? Because we know that we have plumbing issues every year and you need to make sure that they're available. So I think just having those resources and those phone numbers pre-planned this year, The City of Dallas Office of Emergency Management, you know, took us through what they call, their ICS process, where we have a document that's, they call it an IAP. It's basically list out, right, who are the people that you call for what purposes, what is the plan, and we update it every day and send it out to make sure that all the city departments know what the plan is for the day. And that way, as things change, right, and I'm calling, you know, a fire marshal, they've already been updated, right? They get the documents. They know where to go and what they're expected to do. So then I'm not trying to haggle with them of, hey, we need one more officer or whatever. They already understand what the plan is, and they've already committed to whatever it is I'm trying to get them to do in advance of the issue going wrong. So that's been important too.
One thing you just highlighted on, and you know, we can close on this, is I think the importance of our relationship.
Yes.
And the difference between that relationship.
Night and day.
So now, you guys are the coordinator,
right?
You're at the helm, and so you get the wonderful opportunity to call the fire marshal and the chief of police and deal with that.
Yeah.
We're operations, right? So our teams are making sure food's there, security's there, building's okay, everybody's safe, everybody's warm, 24 hours a day, all that stuff. And it's important that those roles are separate, right? So that at 9 o'clock, you're not trying to – our teams aren't trying to run a building and call the plumber.
Yeah.
We're not having to deal with the fire marshal while we're trying to make sure food shows up on time.
Yes.
Having that separation, I think, is such a beautiful relationship.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, it's like that book, Speed of Trust, right? It's like when you know that, hey, you know, you're good at what you do, you know, we're good at what we do, when we kind of design who's going to do what. And then when things go wrong, you've built enough trust and respect for one another so you don't immediately, because it's crisis, right? Yeah. I mean, when you're dealing with thousands of people in crisis, people's default mode is, you know, either advocacy for an individual to, in the process, alienating people that they need help with, right? It's easy to respond, react. Reactionary, you know, to the environment, as opposed to, hey, we've been doing this for years. Like, I know, you know, your intentions and you know mine. And so we can go into it with the expectation like, hey, first, they're going to do a good job. And second, when things go wrong, I know they're not going to turn and just, you know, flip a lid, right? They're going to approach this thoughtfully, and we're going to find a resolution together and move forward together, because we're all committed on the same mission. And that goes from the fire marshal to the police officer to the security to the operator to, you know, the city officials. So
I just love the fact that we're not a shelter. And we don't have to run a shelter every day.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
But I also love the fact that we're flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And we can shut down this building.
Yep.
We're not a 24-hour shop. You guys are.
Right.
We can shut down this building, take all 60 of our staff wherever, and switch into 24-hour mode to supplement and to be able to serve the community in the way we do, and then have this great relationship where we're all supporting each other. Yeah. And it's not an Our Calling thing. It's not an Austin Street thing. It's all these other agencies that are coming together. I mean, it's Stupot's working on transportation and
mental
vans
health.
Around. And
yeah.
North Texas Behavioral Health is doing their thing. We have the SPCA helping with pets. We have Oakland United Methodist Church
opening
up
health.
Extra space. Man, Watermark Health's doing acute care needs, which is, I've got a wound. I've got challenges. My nose is dripping.
Yeah.
You know, look at this thing on my foot. You know, all these other agencies coming together, Housing Forward is helping with intake.
Yep.
It's just a beautiful symphony, right?
And what's cool about it is we've also aligned people's interests to their function. So, you know, we have our COC lead agency, Housing Forward. What do they care about the most? Well, they want to make sure that HMIS data is accurate and it's on point and they've got everything. So it's great. So you're assigned to the intake process, and that's your role in inclement weather because that's what you care the most about, right? Similarly, you know, the fire department, you know, has got their concerns with flow. And, oh, great. Okay. Well, then let's make sure the DFR is there so we can, the Dallas Fire and Rescue Team is there, mm-hmm. paramedics are there. So it's like you have to make sure people, it reminds me a lot of the Book of Nehemiah, right? When the leader was like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have people build the wall outside their house, right? And it's just like, that's great. Set people up by where they live and then let them build and let them do their share in a way that's meaningful and important to them.
I love that story because it's like, do you want the weak spot in the wall to be in front of your house?
Right, yeah.
No. Yeah. And so everybody's building together and they were able to do it in an amazing work. To me, it's a picture of the body of Christ.
It is.
Even working with agencies that aren't believers,
yeah.
it's how we all work together and supplement each other. for the greater good, which is loving our neighbor.
I'm so grateful for you, Wayne.
You too, man.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for what you do, and wouldn't do it without you.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah.
100%.